Hey everybody, it's Eric Clark. It's the end of the first quarter. What a quarter it was. It is Monday, April Fool's Day, about 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. And again, this is the Dynamic Brands first quarter 2024 commentary. Alpha Brands, we focus on global consumer spending, business investment through the leading brands that are dominating the industries in question. And, you know, a $50+ trillion theme probably deserves some dedication in a portfolio. And the irony is that most people do not have much exposure at all to this theme, which is why we created the fund. We make it easy for you to get a quick access to a $50 trillion theme that's really important, really big, really stable, through high quality leading mega brands and innovator brands. And so that, you know, there's a lot of common sense to the strategy. Historically, you know, if you've listened to me before, historically, the thesis is if stocks in general do about 10% or so a year on average over the long period of time, the best businesses, the highest quality companies, great price leaders, cash flow generators, market share leaders, you know, the dominant companies, aka the dominant brands, they should compound better than 10%. And there's a lot of data that supports that, whether, you know, depending on the industry, obviously, and the growth characteristics, you know, we say 13 to 15% great businesses should compound at that over time. Some of the greatest businesses have compounded at 30% over time. I mean, Amazon, going back to the 1997 IPO, has compounded about 30% a year. The opportunity, as a big mean reversion, which is a big theme in this portfolio today, is that the last 3 years, Amazon has compounded at like 5% a year. And so the question is, has something changed to the negative? The answer is no. They actually went through a massive spending cycle. They essentially built a UPS in 3 years, which is astonishing. That pulled down their net income and their free cash flow. The stock has historically kind of correlated to those metrics. But now that spend has radically been reduced. They are now doing more AI spend for the AWS area, which has a much better ROI and higher margins. And that business is reaccelerating. So that's why that's the largest holding in the fund at 16% weighting. And when I get a chance to buy more, I'll get it. I would be happy to have it at 25% if the price of that stock came down to an attractive level, because we see big, big things for Amazon. Call it, you know, target of 225 to 250 over the next 12 months or so. You know, I don't get into, you know, price targets and when, because that's kind of silly. The market does what the market does, but it's a great business that's firing on all cylinders, three really important: retail, cloud, AI adoption, plus advertising. So we'll get into that in the holdings. But for today and this quarterly review, you know, overall, we had a strong Q1 for stocks in general. It was actually the best quarter since the first quarter of 2019, when the S&P was up 13.5%, the QQQ NASDAQ 100 was up 16 and change. So pretty strong, pretty broad based across, you know, there were certainly some leaders and some laggards, but generally speaking, stocks did pretty good for the quarter. And, you know, you essentially got 1 year's worth of typical average gains all in one quarter. So we should certainly expect some potential chop, some more going sideways, even some pullbacks and corrections along the way, because those are normal and should be taken advantage of. But we still see a fairly Goldilocks kind of economy where rates are higher for longer, but generally stable and range bound, maybe some volatility in there. Inflation has come down, not fully, but you know, the big part of the inflation problem is now behind us. And GDP is going to be stable, even if it's, you know, somewhat anemic in the 2 to 3% range. And so, you know, if you look back to 1955, historically, when the Fed funds was 4 to 5, which I think is where we're headed, CPI or inflation is around, let's call it 3, and growth is somewhat stable, consumer spending is somewhat stable, given that it's 70% of the economy, that's historically been a pretty good time for the equity markets. In fact, above average returns. Valuations are certainly a concern in some of the market, but if you look at the S&P 500 on an equal weighted basis, valuations are somewhat reasonable for a potential Goldilocks kind of economy. Now, when I say Goldilocks, I mean, if you're a business that isn't heavily indebted and in need of refinancing at much higher rates, you should be okay. If you are a lower quality business with a lot of debt and in need of refinancing, you're probably lagging already in an area that isn't going to perform. And we certainly have avoided that like the plague. But generally, we're focused on the most iconic, the most relevant brands. Those tend to be much higher quality businesses anyway. So if you look at dynamic for the quarter, up 11.4. So we outperformed the S&P. We pulled back a little bit. I think we were as high as up 12.5. We've seen a little bit of a pullback over the last couple of weeks as the mega cap names have kind of gotten a little bit, gone a little sideways, and some of the secondary stocks, that some of the laggard sectors have performed better. And that's okay, because they had great years. These names had great years last year. They still did okay for the quarter. So it's okay for these big leaders to rest a little bit. Even the QQQ, the NASDAQ 100, was only up 8.5% on the quarter. So we outperformed the S&P. And what's interesting is we look very different than the S&P. I mean, you're talking, and I'll get into the weightings here in a minute, but you know, we looked much different and we still outperformed, particularly at a time when consumer discretionary as a sector was only up 3 and change, even on an equal weighted basis, was up 7. So the consumer in the sector underperformed for the quarter, which is, again, why we don't just invest in the theme of consumption through consumer discretionary and staples in isolation, which is what most certainly active funds or ETFs do. We take a broader approach to consumer spending. We call it lifetime spending, from Pampers to Botox and hip replacements. Along the way, as human beings, we spend money in different categories at different times because we earn, we save, and we invest, and we spend over our lifetimes. And so that's a kind of our broader audience, which makes it a much better core type of strategy. So certainly we could expect some pullback. There's still a lot of broadening out of the market that can happen. You know, if I look at the Brands 200 Index, which is our investable universe, we update that every December. It's a great exercise to keep getting great companies that are resonating with consumers and businesses in the index as they go public and as they maybe show up on our radar screen as market share takers. But only 50% of those names are outperforming the S&P thus far. So there's certainly, you know, not every business is performing at, you know, full speed, which certainly gives some people would, if you're a bear, you'll say, well, that's a red flag. And that certainly can be a red flag. But if you're a bull, you'll say, well, there's a lot of broadening of the market that can happen over time. But we shall see. We're finding great opportunities to pick away at some names that have been laggards that we see much better comparisons year over year, much better valuations, and a part of the economy that's been lagging that is now starting to inflect higher. Even today's manufacturing PMI was back over 50. And so you're getting some of the lagging economy start to inflect higher, which is not, you know, it's interesting. If I look at the sector basis, in the first quarter, energy was up, the top performer up 13.5, financials up 12.5. Oil itself was up 18 to 20%, industrials up 10.8. So you have seen some of that, you know, those kind of cyclicals tend to perform in Q1, which indicates the economy, part of the economy, the lagging economy has started to perform better. And the markets realize that with some better gains that as a catch up. the REITs, again, have been a tough place to be in general, minus 1.2%. So that, you know, they're very interest rate sensitive. The interest rates have been kind of volatile, and there's a lot of debt in that sector. And in some cases, valuations aren't terrific. You really got to have a laser focused approach to investing in REITs when there's so many issues in commercial real estate, et cetera. Even the equal weighted S&P is only up 7.7. So it's been a top heavy market, at least in the first quarter. Even on the equal weighted consumer side, that's up 7 and change. So the crappy retailers actually perform much better. If I use XRT as an ETF, which is a broad equal weighted ETF, and there's a lot of garbage in there that I would never own, that was up 9.4 on the quarter. So from a style box perspective, again, what's worked the best is large cap growth. And, you know, part of that is ETF flows. If money is going in ETFs, most of those ETFs are market cap weighted. You're buying more and more of what's getting bigger and bigger and more expensive and more expensive. You know, for now, that's still continued to work. And, you know, what's interesting about brands is we are in the large cap growth category, but we are not a typical large growth manager that is heavy, heavy exposure to technology. So, you know, adding brands and the consumer to your large cap growth basket or your large cap core is giving you a lot of diversification, because the S&P 500 and the large cap growth index are heavily underexposed to consumer discretionary and consumer staples. So we're going to give you that diversification. You know, just to look at how the Russell 1000 growth is weighted towards sectors, 44% of that index is technology. So everybody has a lot of tech, whether they have an overweight of tech or too much tech, that's, you know, up for debate. But the brand's portfolio has 11% in technology. So we are performing as well as the index while looking radically different than the index, which is essentially what you would like in some diversification. Consumer discretionary, the index is only 15%. The S&P is only 12%. We're 45% in consumer discretionary, very laser focused. Communication services, 12% exposed is the index. We are at 16, so we have an overweight position there. Financials at 6.4 for the index, and we're at 14, so we have twice the exposure to financials. And that has been a positive thing, because KKR and Apollo have performed really well this quarter. But it is all in the alternative asset managers. We don't have any banks. We don't have anything else other than Blackstone, KKR, and Apollo. So, you know, at the style box level, the worst performing was small cap value, up 2.6. So certainly, again, if you want to track where the style box momentum is, there is a definite benefit to being up in quality. The quality ETF, QUAL, is up 11.9, and the size factor, I'll use XLG as an ETF, that's the top 50, was also up 11.9. So we are in the right categories as a consumer investor, because we track that stuff. We look at style, factor, momentum, and we like to know what's working and what's not working. And then we can go in and do our fundamental analysis and decide how are consumers spending, which is the leading brand. Are they tied to those style factors? Maybe we should consider owning them, certainly if they are technically superior as well. Just looking at the portfolio holdings, you know, there certainly was a big basket of winners, outperformers. There were a handful of names that were kind of equal to the market. And then we had a few laggards. Like I said, the brands index is 50% outperforming, 50% underperforming. So every portfolio is going to have some leaders and some laggards. It's just a matter of, you know, making the decision. If you're a laggard, will that continue? Is there something physically wrong, fundamentally wrong? Or is there an opportunity to add to those names, which we've certainly done to some, and we've sold some. So looking at the outperformers on the quarter, Uber was up 25, Apollo was up 21. Salesforce, a big core position, up 14. Amazon was up 18, so outperforming there. Eli Lilly had a great quarter, up 34. Meta was up 37, so had a great quarter there. KKR was up 21. DraftKings was up 28. Live Nation was just slightly over the index, up 13. Netflix up 24. Hermes on the luxury side was up 20. And Ferrari on the luxury side was up 28. On the equal weighted returns, LVMH was up 11. Costco up 11. Microsoft up 12. Home Depot up 11. And CarMax up 13. Both Home Depot and CarMax are new positions. We've owned Home Depot in the past and finally starting to see better things happen at the home level. So we've started adding an actual home basket with Home Depot on the retail side, with Builders First Source, which had a great quarter, up 25% on the supplies, and then D.R. Horton and Lennar on the home builder side. Lennar was up 15% on the quarter, and D.R. Horton, I think, was a little bit of a laggard, but we like that one long term, particularly if interest rates actually do pull back. I think there is an enormous amount of pent-up demand for selling your house and for buying a new house. If interest rates tick down just a little bit, I think people will start picking away at that category. Let's look at some laggards, because there's been some interesting transactions inside the fund in the first quarter. For the first time, I think ever, since 2016, we actually are out of Apple. And that was a hard decision because I love Apple. I love, you know, their products and services. They dominate our lives. But there are some problems with Apple, not only just evaluation, which, you know, it's still the greatest consumer staple ever created. But they do have some problems in China, some competition. They do have some issues on the anti-competition, which could affect margins and revenue over time. I would love to get back into this one under 155 or so. I think that's a much more reasonable price. So we have a little bit more to go. We are out of Nike. That could be the first time we're out of Nike too, if memory serves me. And we're out of Lulu for now too, as well. And so I'm hopeful to get back into these at better prices, but we did some tax loss harvest, and we also took some gains in some of the core in those positions to move into some of the other areas and get some expansion, like I said, in new baskets like home, homes and home building, as well as a few others that I'll discuss a little bit later. We are also out of Visa, and Visa is still executing pretty well. It's a stable, predictable business. We were just closer. It's been a great performer after being such a laggard. And we added to that when it was down, and we just took some profits in that one. And again, this is more of a function of selling something you like to buy something that you love in a more broad, different, getting some different exposures. If that one pulled back, we'd certainly get back into that one, because it'll be certainly one of the more stable businesses in this kind of environment. Inflation's still high, so they are still doing really well on the transaction. Even if volumes are kind of range bound, they're making more money per transaction because the price of things is higher. So it's got a natural inflation hedge built into it. It was just closer towards our kind of fair value. Google was only up 8. There's a little bit of controversy around Google now, but we did add to that on the recent pullback. I think they will prove to figure it out. And they are still a bloated infrastructure in need of some getting fit like Meta did last year. And I think management has probably gotten the message there. Blackstone was actually a laggard on the first quarter, only up 1%. We added to that one when it was down. Still love it. It's obviously the 800-pound gorilla in PE and alts. With a higher valuation than Apollo and KKR. It's also in the S&P. The other two will be in the S&P at some point. I have high confidence in that. You just never know when. And the valuations are certainly just a little bit better. And in many cases, like Apollo in particular, has much better, much more kind of exposure to private credit, which is where a lot of the flows are going. The private equity business is still a little bit slow because realizations, monetizations, and then deployments are a little bit slow. That'll take some time, but there is a lot of earnings power in these three names over time, and they both have I think Blackstone has like $200 billion of dry powder to put to work. So, you know, they're almost hoping for pricing and sentiment to go to get a little squishy so they can put a little bit more money to work. I think KKR has, and, you know, has almost $100 billion of dry powder, and Apollo is like $50 billion. So you're talking about massive amounts of dry powder to put to work at some point that will eventually turn into better distributable earnings and fee-related earnings. TJ Maxx was a bit of a laggard, up 8%. We continue to add to that one on dips because consumers are spending selectively and always looking for bargains. And TJ Maxx does that on the apparel side. Mercado Libre in Latin America was down 3.7. That's still a core position. They had a little bit of a squishy, noisy quarter, but we still love the free cash flow generation and the growth story, particularly in Mexico. So, and we added a new position in a trophy asset, Manchester United, as a turnaround story. The stock's down 31% in the quarter. We did not own it for that drawdown, but we did buy it in the 13s where it is now. So we have a pretty good cost basis. And I think over time that is going to prove to be a great investment as the turnaround really gets taken, you know, a little bit more seriously by market participants with a partial new owner who's serious about turning things around, getting Old Trafford, the stadium, either a major facelift, which I think is less likely, and a full new stadium plan with a full redevelopment happening. That, you know, obviously that takes years to do, but is going to be, you know, really additive to the valuation and the revenue potential of the brand. Okay, let's pivot a little bit to some next potential market catalysts that we see. Certainly, we've already seen rate cuts. The expectation for rate cuts is slowing because the economy continues to do pretty well. Whether the market has, you know, the market's down today 200 or 300 points after a strong quarter, I'm not surprised, but rates are up pretty strong today. So the market's reacting to up rates, but also the expectation that maybe the Fed only needs to do one, maybe two, maybe it doesn't need to do anything until after the election, you know, who knows, but just remember, if the Fed doesn't need to cut rates, it means the economy is still hanging in there pretty strongly. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing for corporate earnings. We certainly, April, the next earnings cycle is going to start mid-April. So we're a couple of weeks away from that. And you've seen with Nike and Lululemon and Palo Alto Networks, you know, if you have particularly, you know, valuations that are at the upper end of the spectrum and you either disappoint or have some squishy guidance or some noisy quarters, the market has been a little merciless on the quarterly response. So we are certainly, we love volatility here. We love to take advantage of short-term earnings reactions that give better prices for great companies that are still executing and have great growth prospects. So, you know, we do tend to have a little bit of higher turnover in earnings season, because if the market is a little more irrational and acts strangely and knocks down some good companies short term, we love, again, to sell or trim what we like to buy more of what we love. And that's proven to be a great strategy over the long term. And again, it's one of the reasons why not only do great companies tend to compound better than the S&P over time, but if you add a component of adding more when they're down, that's a great 1-2 punch. Buy and hold your great core, long-term holding for great brands, the consumer spending theme, and then be willing to add to the fund or to the individual securities when they pull back. Because there is always demand for the best businesses when they pull back. So if you get a chance to buy something 10, 15, 20% down, God forbid, that tends to add to your, you know, your nest egg over time and lowers your overall cost basis and shortens your recovery time back to all-time highs. So you know, we don't see anything spending related to change the trajectory of consumers. So, you know, if you look at consumers broadly, they're still spending, but they're not spending as broadly as they did pre-pandemic still, which is why we only have, you know, less than 30 names now, because if consumers aren't spending broadly, then our allocations to consumer stocks isn't going to be as broad. They are still bargain hunting for part of their needs, and they're still begrudgingly overpaying for some of the things, the products, the services, and the brands that they absolutely love and they're favoring. So yes, they are spending more on services, eating out, going on vacation, taking cruises, going to concerts, et cetera. They're spending more on luxury goods. If you're a higher income person with good real estate exposure, the wealth effect is allowing you to spend more broadly on luxury, which is why we own Hermes and LVMH and Ferrari, et cetera. But so you have to be very specific. And again, the proof in the pudding is that the consumer discretionary sector was a big laggard for the first quarter. We didn't see it in our portfolio because we were in the right places and we were diversified across important spending categories. But that tells you that the spending is still a little bit lumpy. And I think it's going to continue for the rest of 2024. So we're being very specific and laser focused about where we are spending as a consumer and then what stocks and brands we want to own, because prices are still high across, you know, hotels, new cars. I mean, just to go try to buy a new car, the prices are absolutely insane. Their cost structure is out of control, which is why we don't own any new car manufacturers currently. Now, Tesla is interesting because not the stock is technically just doesn't look attractive. But they are one of the few brands who have been willing to sacrifice margins to get volumes. So it's never been a better time to buy a Tesla if you want to have an EV. We think that's going to drive more people into keeping their car for longer. If your lease is up and you're going to keep your car for longer, that's going to require more maintenance, which is why we own O'Reilly Automotive. Or you might decide, you know what, I'm going to turn in my lease, I'm going to pay the little lease fee, and I'm going to go to a CarMax. I'm going to buy a lesser priced car. That's why we own CarMax. It's been a big laggard for the last 2 or 3 years. And so it's gotten to a valuation point where it's kind of attractive and intriguing down here. So sentiment continues to be better. It's amazing how prices drive sentiment, isn't it? You couldn't give away stocks a year ago. Sentiment was dreadful. And the returns have been terrific, but now sentiment is much better. But be very careful about, you know, extrapolating that to a contrarian signal. In my opinion, when sentiment is dreadful and extreme, that's a wonderful contrarian signal. But when sentiment is bullish, that tends to carry on and be self-reinforcing for much longer than you think. Again, the consumer is employed. If you've been laid off, and there will be layoffs, particularly from AI adoption that starts to get rolled out around the country and around the world. Generally speaking, you can find a good job. You're getting good severance packages. Incomes are stable. The wealth effect is pretty solid. You know, homes are stable. Stocks have been strong for the last 18 months. Incomes are stable. Sentiment is better. Again, that's self-reinforcing. So we see, you know, if you look at even household debt as a percent of disposable income, it's still like at a 30-year low. You know, in 07, it was like 13%. It's like 9.8% currently. And it even looks like some of the credit card delinquencies have peaked and are kind of getting improving on the margin, which is why some of the credit card stocks have actually started to recover, like a Discover and a Capital One, and even Amex has actually had a good recovery. So retail sales is still stable. It's still a $6 trillion a year theme. Just retail sales, $6 trillion. So there's an absolute reason to own exposure to such a large theme. And then lastly, just looking at the portfolio, just so you kind of get a feel for where we're allocated. Again, Amazon's the biggest holding, 16%. Retail's solid. Margins are expanding across AWS and reacceleration there. Ad spending is good. Net income and free cash flow are good. They're making some interesting investments in AI, private companies, which is wonderful. And that's, you know, that obviously is going to pay off dividends in the future. But Amazon's really good at making investments for their own business that also can be part of AWS, and they can roll them out in you know, for other companies. We still have about 14% exposure to the alternatives, Blackstone, KKR, and Apollo. I talked about that. I won't reiterate that. About 20% exposure to select differentiated retail, warehouses on Costco, general merchandise in a newer position with Target, kind of a margin resurgence there, discount apparel with TJ Maxx, O'Reilly Automotive on the auto retail and repair side with CarMax on the discount autos, and then obviously Amazon on retail. We still love experiences. Live Nation is a big holding for us. We love Netflix. Certainly on a pullback, it's essentially become the cable for everyone. That's the first place we generally start when we're looking for some entertainment, which makes the subscription A, sticky, and B, good pricing power still remains. Certainly can be volatile on quarterly earnings and retail ads, but I'm happy to buy more on dips. We still love the luxury and trophy assets category with LVMH, Hermes, Ferrari, and Manchester United, the new holding. On health and innovation, core holding of Eli Lilly has been super strong and a wonderful performer over the years. We have a fairly recent new position in Intuitive Surgical. They are by far the leader in robotic surgeries, just rolled out a new robot that's going to be really interesting in hospitals. And, you know, their sales reps have a really amazing tool when they're sitting talking to a hospital that can literally show with precision the ROI associated with not only adopting and buying one of these expensive machines and robots, but also why it can help lower costs overall and manage costs for the hospitals. And hospitals are in major cost-cutting mode. So if you can show with precision that adoption of something is going to bring down other costs, they're going to get a lot more intrigued. So I like that name. Certainly not a cheap stock, but from an innovation perspective, huge, huge innovation. We do have some tech exposure to AI and semiconductor and manufacturing through Taiwan Semi, which is a fairly recent name. You know, I do think this is a bit of an AI bubble that will continue to inflate over time. And the thing about bubbles is when companies, you know, they tend to go on further than you think. Look at NVIDIA, was over a $2 trillion market cap. In that regard, if NVIDIA is performing really well and there's high demand for its products, then Taiwan Semi, who is the largest fab manufacturer, is certainly going to do well. And it would not shock me when this one ultimately hits $1 trillion in market cap, and it's 750 currently. So I think there's some good upside in Taiwan Semi. Yes, there is some China invasion risk. That is probably why the stock has lagged a little bit relative to some others. And the valuation is pretty attractive in our opinion. Salesforce is a good AI adoption. You're very sticky in corporate America. They will be rolling out new products and services for their clients that will just bring them more loyalty, in our opinion, than we have obviously with Microsoft. And then lastly, on the ad tech, we have Meta and Google. So 14.5% non-US, right? That's a good differentiator for the fund versus just the US style box. You know, the nature of great brands is that they have exposure to global sales in general anyway, but it's nice to have some diversification outside the US, making this fund wonderful for smaller accounts to give them global exposure to an important theme through great companies. All of 100% of my assets in stocks is invested in this global brand strategy. So I'm certainly eating my own cooking there, as is our team. So it's wonderful for small accounts. It's great as a core, and it's certainly great as a diversifier with your traditional large growth funds and ETFs, because we do what we do radically different. There's not a ton of overlap, and we give you the exposure that you should have that you're not getting in your traditional growth. Okay, the fun part, what's going to happen the rest of 2024? Here's a crazy prediction. Stocks are going to go up and down. I don't have my crystal ball isn't any better than anybody else's. I will tell you that there will be corrections. There will be pullbacks. There will be rallies. There will be volatility. We just love to take advantage of the volatility along the way. And just, you know, I can't stress this enough. The best companies, the leading brands, always have buyers when prices go lower. So there is no reason to panic, particularly from our perspective, when the market does what it does, pull back. Just be aggressive and add to those positions. This one strategy will serve you better than any others over a long period of time than just being willing to not panic and add to your positions to great businesses, whether it's ours or buying the quality businesses, the other funds and ETFs that you have. Use that as a way to build bigger, deeper positions. There will be volatility, geopolitics, our elections, Fed policy, an overbought situation, maybe sentiment changes. There's always something. And frankly, be very nervous. If you can't find a reason for stocks to go down, be nervous, because that's when sucker punches tend to happen. So we're always mindful and trying to look around corners. But generally speaking, we see pretty good things for the economy, for the Fed, for inflation, for interest rates, for GDP. And that tends to be pretty good for stocks overall. So that's it, everybody. Thank you so much for your time and your interest and your exposure to the fund. And we are looking forward to, I'll do another shorter update in a month or so, and obviously a more detailed one every quarter. Thanks a lot.